From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, San Francisco Unified is one of the highest scoring urban school districts in the state. But when you look at the achievement gap between white and black students, you get a different picture. Nearly 75% of African American students failed to meet state standards in at least one subject area, compared with less than 15% of white students during this last academic year. San Francisco's new superintendent, Vincent Matthews, joins us to talk about how he plans to address the achievement gap and to take your questions. Join us after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're joined this hour by San Francisco School Superintendent Vincent Matthews, who took the helm of the state's eighth largest school district several months ago. But first, we want to do a quick check-in with KQED's John Sepulvedo, who is at the fire staging area in Escondido in San Diego's North County, observing the wildfires that continue to rage through Southern California. Hi, John Sepulvedo.
Hi, Mina.
Hey, tell us what you are seeing this morning.
Well, right now, speaking of schools, I'm seeing a lot of unhappy kids who have to go to school. They were hoping that their classes would get canceled. This fire staging area is in a big county park here in Escondido. It is across the street from a high school. This school is not closed, but there are schools within San Diego County that will be closed, specifically around Oceanside, which is a fairly populous area, and then, of course, in the town of Bosnal, where the actual fire began yesterday. About 4,100 acres have been burned so far. That actually is much lower than it could have been and that was expected throughout the night. But, of course, these winds are expected to kick back up, these Santa Ana winds, which your listeners have been hearing about all week. So we're going to wait and see today about how bad this might get and whether even more schools will close.
So is there a bit of a lull in the wind right now? Are firefighters able to get a handle on this or make some progress?
You know, the firefighters are kind of, so based on where the fire is burning, it's, if any of your listeners are familiar with San Diego, there's a huge swath of land in North County, San Diego, Camp Pendleton, and a lot of that is kind of rural mountainous land, and the fire is right now is burning towards there. So they're okay with that. It's 0% contained, but what that containment means is that they just can't leave the fire alone at any one place. The question is whether the winds will change. Right now, to answer your question, the winds are almost non-existent. There have been some gusts. I should say the winds are at this very second are non-existent, but then all of a sudden there are gusts up to 40 miles per hour that kind of come howling through. But they haven't been sustained. They've been really sporadic so far this morning, but they're not expected to be as the day goes on and as the land heats up. It's going to be about 80, 85 degrees where I'm at right now.
You've been noting that the fires have not only threatened human lives, but also animal lives. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, of course, there's that video of that went viral of the man saving the bunny. And, you know, it's been one of the saddest things, hearing these animals whine and these lonely, desperate cries as they die. They get caught behind the fire line. We've seen a lot of deer kind of burst through, a lot of house cats. But what perhaps the most notable, because it's so many, is the horses, both in Ventura County, where the Thomas Fire, which is about 10 to 20% contained at this moment, there are a lot of stables out there. There were a lot of horse trainers out there. And then this area of San Diego actually is known for its horse training. This isn't too far from the Del Mar Racetrack. And this was a thoroughbred where one of the 67 structures destroyed so far by the Lilac Fire. One of them was a thoroughbred training center, and at least 25 horses died. I heard that number is expected to go up because what happened was they opened the gates to let these horses out, escape these flames, and it became so smoky so quick in some areas that the horses doubled back and actually started running towards the fire, and by that it was too late. So, I mean, just a tragic story of beloved animals, you know, falling victim to this fire.
Yes, and there was the story the other day about the 30 horses found dead by the Creek Fire. What are the condition of fire crews right now? Are they getting the support, the reinforcements they need?
It appears that they are. I'm seeing trucks just in the last hour pull in from all over the country, as far away as Arizona, Northern California. And when I say Arizona, I mean like the far end of Arizona. towards the Four Corners. And then we saw, I saw crews from Oregon, a lot of Oregon license plates here. But we're expecting more because President Trump has signed a declaration, an emergency declaration, that's going to free up some resources. And of course, Governor Jerry Brown has put it, San Diego County, as a state emergency declaration. I think one thing I do want to really give a shout out to the firefighters, because I saw it both in Ojai and in Ventura as they battled the fire on that was going on the 101, and we were hearing about it today. Firefighters have done an amazing job of containing these fires and preventing the loss of life. So far, we know of one confirmed fatality from this. We don't expect that number to stay the same, but it is much, much lower than the North Bay. The other thing, too, is these prison firefighters. Just a few moments ago on the California report, we had Hans Letts of KBUU. He was talking about women prison firefighters who were working very hard to help save his home in Malibu. We have heard similar stories, and I have seen similar stories in Ventura, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara County. We saw them digging some ditches to make sure the fire didn't spread too far over there. I mean, these are women who, when they get out of prison, they're going to have a lot of hard time. They're going to have a really hard time trying to find a job because of their conviction status. And yet, here they are saving people's homes. It's really something to be seen and something that should be recognized.
KQED's John Sepulvedo. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
John is at the fire staging area in Escondido in San Diego County. We now turn back to our conversation with San Francisco Schools Chief Vincent Matthews, who just completed what he called a 90-day listening and learning tour to look at the district's strengths and challenges. Welcome to Forum, Superintendent Matthews.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
And full disclosure, my brother is actually a teacher in SF Unified.
Oh, fantastic.
So you have gone on this tour. You recognized at that time that there were a lot of strengths in this district. Briefly, what did you see as the greatest strengths of San Francisco Unified?
Thank you for once again for having me here. So I had the opportunity to spend my first 90 days listening and learning. I believe that's important for a superintendent coming in. And it really was around finding out what are the strengths and then what are our areas of growth. The strengths that I've noted in the plan were that people, we definitely have a base here that really cares about children, cares about their well-being, and really cares about making sure that they have the skills that they need to be successful in the 21st century. Teachers were definitely seen as a strength in this district. The finance department and the way that they report finances and operations are another strength in this district. So there were a lot of strengths that came through in the 90 days of listening and learning.
I want to focus on where you feel like the district is falling short. The district's numbers say that 74% of black students did not meet 2016-17 state assessment standards in at least one subject area. Similarly, you have 65% of Pacific Islander students not meeting those standards, 61% of Latino students, and that's compared to 15% of white students. So I understand that you're committed to closing the student achievement gap, but how do you plan to do it?
So as you just noted, that those numbers were also in my report, and that was one of my findings, that the outcomes that we that are coming out, especially for African-American students, but those groups that you also noted, are not where we want them to be. Typically, what I would do in a 90-day report is issue my talk about my initial observations and then make recommendations, and then I would come forward with a plan for those recommendations. But in this one area, I knew the importance of coming forward with the plan right now. And so your question was, how do we as a district attend to address that? We have a proposal that we're putting forward. It's called what I'm labeling as PITCH, P-I-T-C-H. And it really is to look at 20 schools, 10 historically underserved schools, and 10, which we are calling high equity gap schools. These are schools where the average number looks good, 60% proficient, but they have a huge gap where Asian white students may be scoring at 90% proficiency, and then you see African American students scoring at 20 or 30% proficiency. So they have over a 50 point proficiency gap. And in those schools, what we want to increase, The reason I'm using the letters pitch, P is for professional capacity. So we want to increase the professional capacity at those schools. I is for instructional guidance, looking at differentiating instruction and how we meet the needs of those students. T is for transforming mindsets. The C is for creating a culture of collaboration where everybody in the school is working together. And the H is for high quality staff. How do we move forward and make sure that the staffs in all of these 20 schools, the 20 targeted schools, are we increase the effectiveness and the experience level of both the leadership and the teaching staff at all of these schools. So that's how we our plan right now and the proposal right now to move forward with the plan that we're calling PITCH.
The San Francisco chapter of the NAACP has called, and the president, Reverend Amos Brown, has called on the school board to declare a state of emergency regarding Black student achievement. Why has the district resisted?
Actually, the district hasn't resisted. At the school board meeting on November 14th, where I revealed my 90 days of listening and learning and then the plan for addressing the gap with our African-American students, the school board at that meeting actually did say that, yes, this absolutely is a state of emergency. And not only that, but a previous meeting about 2 weeks earlier where the data was first released by the state, the school board actually was a precursor to my plan where they actually, each and every school board member, called for addressing this gap of African-American students and called for moving forward and making sure that we are giving all of our students the skills that they need, but specifically our African-American students.
Well, I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We're talking with San Francisco Unified's new school superintendent, Vincent Matthews. We're discussing his priorities for the district, closing the achievement gap. What are your questions for SFUSD Superintendent Vincent Matthews? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. You can also post your comments and questions on Facebook. You can tweet us at KQED Forum. You can email us at forum@kqed.org. And once again, that number is 866-733-6786. 866-733-6786. So you've talked about PITCH. What specific benchmarks are you going to try to meet in terms of Black student achievement, like a certain percentage scoring at a certain place by a certain year? Have you gotten that specific?
No, we haven't gotten that specific yet. But what we're looking at, so this issue has been an issue for decades, for at least the last three decades, the achievement gap based on race. It's fluctuated, but it hasn't systemically decreased. And so for our most underserved groups, African-American, Hispanic, Latino, Pacific Islanders, that gap is there and has remained there. So what we're looking at, and that's over different tests. You look at...
But why?
Why
has that gap been so persistent?
So what we've seen, what I have seen, I didn't say this initially, but I actually grew up, I'm a product of the district. Went to schools here in the district, graduated from McAteer High, class of 79, go Jaguars, and then actually taught in the district, and I taught in Hunters Point. And what we've seen over time is we've seen areas, pockets of excellence, pockets of success, but we haven't seen the gap close over time. And my belief around that is that is it's because we've the pockets of success we've seen is because you've had the strategies that I've listed. Those strategies have not been put forward in a very in a sustained systemic way. So you've seen, for example, you'll see professional capacity at Carver or at Drew, but not throughout the schools in Hunters Point or throughout the high equity gap schools. So I believe that it's because it hasn't been systemic. And it hasn't been sustained. And my goal is to make sure it's systemic first and foremost. But then in order to do this, we have to increase resources so that we can make sure it's sustained.
So you're saying that it's only been partially implemented in terms of solutions.
Correct. Partially, and also just not in a systemic way, in a very targeted way that makes sure that we're doing this throughout the schools in a systemic and sustained way.
Would that be true for the increase in suspensions of African-American students as well? One of the things that a Coleman advocate told KQED was that he felt like the restorative justice practices that are being implemented in San Francisco Unified are not being implemented completely, just partially at some schools.
So we are, as a system, implementing them completely. This is the school board has been very deliberate and very forthright in saying these numbers have to decrease. And my job as a superintendent is to implement the policies and practices of our school board. And so in moving that forward, we have definitely moved this forward in each and every school. And then it becomes how we make sure that it's done at every school. So it is being put forth in every school. How it's implemented at every school, I'd say the person who told you that is right. It's just us making sure that it's implemented in a very systematic and similar way throughout our system.
Are you concerned, though, that fall 2016 is the first semester since 2012 where you've seen an increase in suspensions of Black students, even though there is supposed to be an emphasis on less punitive punishments?
Yeah, we did see that increase, but if you go back, it's still lower than it had been previously. So it had come down, then it spiked up. And right now, actually, there was a report just given to our board 2 weeks ago where we are actually going in and taking a deep dive into that data to figure out why we have had this increase.
Well, we've got lots of calls coming in, and I want to get straight to them. Let's start with Rob in San Francisco. Hi, Rob.
Hi. I've got a son that's in middle school in San Francisco, and my wife also teaches PE in San Francisco. And first of all, to your point about, you know, the no consequences, that's what I'm going to call it, she can't have any consequences for discipline problems in her class anymore because she's not allowed to. So I think you're teaching these little kids, because she teaches young kids, they're going to learn that they can act up and there's no consequences because they're not allowed to discipline the kids. Second of all, my son says almost every test they take, they're allowed to retake it if their grade is not that good. So I think you're dumbing down the situation there as well. And at the same time, you've gotten rid of the GATE program. You've gotten rid of any extra credit stuff. So my son, who we're fortunate, seems to get stuff fairly quick. He's totally bored. And we're worried that once he gets to high school, he's going to be in for a total shock because he's going to have a homework load and more.
Rob, I think your phone line is actually getting a bit windy there, but we get a sense of what you're asking. Vincent Matthews, can you respond to Rob's concerns? He's got concerns here about discipline. He's got concerns about his kid who is achieving but bored.
So let me start with the consequences. That what we have in the restorative practices, what we are attempting to make sure that students understand is that if a action is a negative action, that our first response isn't to kick the student out of class or to suspend the student out of school. So we know that in order for students to learn, they need to be in school and in class. So what we're working with is with teachers and with our paraprofessional staffs on how we get restorative practices that actually teach the lesson around what was done wrong and what to make better choices. Now, to state that there are no consequences, that's just not correct. There absolutely are consequences, but what we're looking at is consequences that keep students in class and keep students in school. On his second point around what's happening with students being able to retake assessments, one of the things that our goal is for students to actually master whatever that skill is, and we want them to be proficient in that skill. So for students to be able to go back and show that they've mastered that skill or show that they're proficient in the skill, ultimately that's what we want at the end of the day. So in many cases, absolutely, students have the opportunity to take the test, understand what they got wrong, to go back, relearn, and then retake that assessment. We ultimately want them to be able to demonstrate that they've mastered the skill, that they're proficient in the skill.
What assessments are you talking about exactly?
Well, my assumption is he is talking about in-class assessments, the assessments that have been designed by teachers, by instructors. And that, so I'm assuming that. Now, if you're talking about our state testing, our high-stakes testing, no, they can't go back on those tests. But so I'm assuming that he's not talking about those tests.
Well, let's go next to hang on just one second. My phone system here is acting up a little bit. Let's go next to James in Dublin. Hi, James.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question was, are there any plans to increase teacher literacy for non-traditional subjects, things like financial literacy or civics, areas that we haven't seen a focus on in the past few generations, I feel like, but it seems like they're really important, especially nowadays. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
James, thanks.
Thank you, James. So our curriculum and instruction department is consistently doing what I spent the first 90 days doing, going out, listening and learning and looking at what we believe students are going to need to be successful in the 21st century. You know, we describe our mission is that every day we'll provide each and every student the quality instruction and equitable support required to thrive in the 21st century. So with that as our mission, then it becomes incumbent upon us to consistently and systematically review what we're teaching, but also going out into the community to see what is happening, what's happening in the 21st century, and what's required for a student to thrive in the 21st century. And one of the things you just said is as you're looking today and looking at students needing financial literacy, we absolutely agree with that. But what we're doing is constantly going out, surveying the community, surveying the business community, surveying our parent community to make sure that our curriculum, our instruction matches what we believe are the skills that students are going to need to thrive in the 21st century.
Well, let me thank that caller. And as you're talking about enabling students to thrive, you're also alluding to the importance of instruction. And Jennifer in San Francisco, you have a question related to teachers.
Yes. I have two high schoolers in SFUSD, and I'm very concerned about plans to increase retention of quality teachers, whether it's due to salary, lack of housing, lack of administrative support. It seems like there's so much teacher turnover.
Jennifer, thanks.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the call, and thank you for the question. So you may or may not know, it's been in the paper, but we've reached a tentative agreement with our UESF, our Teachers Association, Teachers and Paraeducator Association. And this calls for a 16% compensation package over 3 years. So that we believe that's a big part of attracting and then also retaining our teachers. And a big part of that is one of the issues that you brought up, which is housing in San Francisco in particular. We all know how much that has risen. With this increase, if it is ratified, it will move our district closer to the top of teacher compensation for large urban districts in the state, especially if you're combining that with a 15% raise over the previous 3 years. The other aspect of your question around retaining teachers.
That
is really
other aspect, actually, if it's okay, we can take up right after the break. We're taking your questions for San Francisco Unified's new school superintendent, Vincent Matthews. You can join the conversation by calling 866-733-6786, and we'll have more with him after the break. I'm Mina Kim. This is KQED Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking with San Francisco Schools Chief Vincent Matthews about the persistent achievement gap between white and black students and Latino and Pacific Islander students. We're talking about his priorities for the district and closing the achievement gap, as well as teacher pay and retention. And you can join the conversation by calling 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us at forum@kqed.org. And Vincent Matthews, you were just responding to Jennifer's question about teacher retention. I mean, even with the 11% pay raise and even with the possibility of a 15% increase, right, in the next couple of years or so, and part of that is pending passage of a parcel tax, you still have many teachers comparing teacher salaries with other districts, say in Marin or in Palo Alto, and it's still much higher than what San Francisco is able to do. So how are you able to retain quality teachers?
So I want to go back, first of all, once again, thank you, Jennifer, for that question. So 11% is the base salary. Then there's a combination of add-ons, one-time payment, and then the potential for a parcel tax that raises it up to 16. But that's in combination to a 15% over the last 3 years. So the 16% is on top of what we've done over the last 3 years, which is a 15%. So that's one thing. Let me get to Jennifer's, and then I'll get to yours, Mina. And so also, Jennifer, I want to say that we are looking at what teachers have told us is that they also want more professional development. So we're looking at increasing that professional capacity and instructional guidance around more professional development for teachers. So they giving them the skills to be able to do their jobs and do it successfully, we know helps retain teachers. And then we're looking at increasing the effectiveness of both our teachers, instructional personnel, and then also our administrative personnel, our leadership personnel. We know that much of a teacher's job satisfaction definitely depends on the leadership and the capacity of the leadership at sites. So we know that specifically. In regards to a comparison of districts like Marin and districts like Santa Clara, those districts are basic aid districts, and they have a different funding mechanism and funding source. It's the way that this state has set up its funding system, and it allows those districts to retain their property tax dollars locally, which allows them to pay more. You have to meet a certain threshold to become a basic aid district. San Francisco isn't at that threshold, but places, certain districts in Marin, certain districts in the Silicon Valley are able to do that, which allows them to pay more. The question we as a state have to ask is this a fair system? Because students from the Tamalpais Union High School District are competing for colleges with students from Balboa High here in San Francisco. In my estimation, it is not a level playing field. But that's what's happening right now. That's one aspect. And I think I'm, you know, going to say the second aspect is Prop 13, which is how we fund schools in the state of California. And we as a voting body decided in 1978 that this is the way we wanted to fund our school system. Well, there is a consequence for decisions that we make. And ultimately, we as a state have to ask ourselves, do we believe with the passage of Prop 13 that we are adequately funding schools the way they should be funded?
Well, I guess just quickly, do you think that the increases in teacher salaries are going to end the problem of unaffordability and inability to live in this city?
I think they will assist. One other aspect that we are working with the city on is we have passed a first step in building teacher housing. So we're not only attacking the problem from a compensation aspect and from a professional development aspect, but we are also looking at increasing the number of houses, affordable housing, so that teachers will be able to use their compensation to live affordably. Now, here the key is, though, that right now it's a drop in the bucket. It isn't the number of houses, but it is absolutely a first step.
Well, I want to thank Jennifer for the call and go next to Sarah in Pinole. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, my question to I think that pitch is a great idea. I love all your answers, but I feel like there's a letter missing. And that has to do with like an S maybe for social service or an F for family, because no matter how fabulous you create a system within the schools with teacher development and all those kinds of things, you've got to have a family component. And our families are falling apart in San Francisco, all over the country, but we're focusing on San Francisco now. And, you know, no matter how fabulous a school or a teacher is, if a child is not eating, is seeing abuse at home and all those kinds of things, they're not going to perform well in school. And I think there needs to be some sort of connection to community as well as just within the schools. And I know that San Francisco Children's Fund has created an amazing opportunity and incredible network of resources that are available. And is there some opportunity to access those, you know, within the school district or the system?
Sarah, thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. I appreciate that call. So I didn't go into detail in each of the letters. I just gave the high level. But the C, the collaborative culture, a big part of that is the wraparound supports that the school community is able to provide. And that is the on-site school community in collaboration with inclusive family and community engagement and school family supports. So that the S that you say, we actually see inside of the C, which is our mental health providers. We want to have a mental health provider on site. Our after-school programs, we see them as not just after-school programs, but embedded into the school. We want to have a lead community-based organization that basically ties all those organizations together. So you're absolutely right. The S that you say is embedded in our C, our collaborative culture, but we have to have wraparound services, wraparound supports in our schools to make them work in the best way possible for our students. And I totally agree with everything that you said.
Well, I think Susan has a follow-up question about pitch. Susan in San Francisco, good morning. Hi, Susan, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. And I am a parent of three children in the San Francisco Unified School District. And I wanted to, and I'm glad to hear that Superintendent Matthews has this pitch program. But I want to know, how is pitch different than what's been done in the past, and how much can he name one concrete thing that's different than some of the prior programs at Closing the Achievement Gap?
Susan, thank you. Go ahead, Superintendent Vincent Matthews, because there have also been other people who said, well, we've heard all this before.
Yeah, I would. The two biggest areas are the areas that I listed earlier. I believe that it absolutely has to be systemic. So it has to be, this has to be throughout all of the 20 schools that I've noted in the plan. I'm not going to read them here, but you can definitely go to our website and you can see the entire plan in depth. But I think the other piece that is, that where we've seen failure in the past is the sustainability piece. And my commitment is to, I've actually, this question was asked in one of our questions, is what happens when the resources run out? And my goal is to make sure that those resources don't run out. So I'm already started the campaign, conversations with inside of our district, but also with our partners who have funded us and our partners who haven't funded us yet, but will be funding us. Around this program, the biggest piece that you said, can I name one thing? I believe it's the sustainability piece. This has to be a district effort. Not, it can't be the superintendent's plan, because when the superintendent goes away, if it's the superintendent's plan, it's the plan goes away. But also, it has to have the funding and the resources to sustain it over time. And what we've seen with previous efforts is that they will be in place for 2 or 3 years, and either the political winds change or the resources change, and then those efforts. And we've seen, we actually saw huge increases in African-American achievement in some of the efforts for a couple of years, but when those resources went away or the political will went away, the plan went away.
We're taking your questions for San Francisco Unified's Superintendent Vincent Matthews, who started the job in May amid teacher salary negotiations and results that showed a persistent achievement gap between white, Black, and Latino and Pacific Islander students. And this is your chance to ask him your questions. The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. Our website, kqed.org/forum. Our email address, forum@kqed.org. Steve writes, the lottery system keeps upper middle class families like mine out of SFUSD. It's a failure. You need parents like us to opt back in. What are you doing to fix this? First, can you describe the system of parents choosing schools, which I assume is what he's mentioning here, and to address Steve's concerns about it?
So the process we have now is that parents go into our placement system. They have the opportunity to choose a whole list of schools, their first choice all the way down to their 20th choice. And then they go into a lottery, and then the school assignment basically begins looking at their choices. We definitely want parents to receive their top choices. Now, he says it's this is Steve.
Yes.
Steve says it's a failure, but over 80% of our parents receive their first three choices. So that, and when we talk to them, they don't describe it as a failure. So most people receive their top choices. What we're actually doing is looking at, and one of the things that we know is that the student assignment system is actually a tool, and a tool to achieve the objectives of our district. And what our student our school board actually has a subcommittee. They actually met last night around looking at the student assignment system and how we can improve that system. So they're actually consistently and constantly looking at the system, looking at what's working, and then looking at what's not working. And as I said, we have 85% of our parents receiving their choice, first three choices, and are glad about that. Anyway, the system looks at that and it begins to make switches and trade-offs and moves certain people up, giving people a higher choice. And then there are also certain schools that, for example, if you attend Willie Brown, you have a higher chance of getting into your high school. There's also an area of the city we call CTIP, which is in the southeast section, and then into the Mission, where if you live in that area. So it's a complicated system. It absolutely is. But it's trying to achieve the objectives of the district, which is to diversify schools, increase the integration at our schools.
But do you think that this actually does that? Do you think that this method effectively diversifies schools? Others feel like it's only accelerated school segregation.
So in the report last night, we have actually seen a decrease in the schools where over 60% of the schools were of one ethnic group. So we actually seen a decrease. I believe it was about, I don't have the report in front of me, it was 15 schools that had over 60% of one ethnicity that have, we've seen a decrease in those schools. So it is doing that. But at the same time, there are many questions still in place, and that's what the committee is looking at. The next committee meeting is in February, and we're answering the questions of both the committee, the subcommittee, as well as the members of the public who were there last night asking many questions. And the goal is to consistently move the system forward so it's answering the desires of our district and at the same time meeting the needs of as many of our community as possible. We know we're never going to please everyone, but it should meet the needs of as many of our members of our community as possible.
And let me thank the caller and go next to Jill in Berkeley. Hi, Jill.
Hi. My question for Dr. Matthews is, I've been an educator in San Francisco Unified School District for more than 20 years, and the largest obstacle to implementing some of these changes systematically is cronyism and nepotism, and I'm wondering how he's going to address that.
What example of that did you see?
Well, first of all, within the HR department, different administrators are able to acquire teachers based on the relationship they have with the personnel in the HR department. Additionally, in terms of restorative practices being implemented, it depends on the relationship that a school or certain personnel have with the department that is implementing the restorative practices, whether or not teachers are then asked or required to go to the trainings. It's very hit or miss in terms of how much faculty have actually been trained in that regard. And thirdly, with the suspension of African-American males, it's absolutely true that all schools were pretty much encouraged to go down to a 0%, or otherwise administrators were penalized.
Well, Vincent Matthews, Jill's concerns about nepotism and its consequences.
So as you noted at the beginning of the segment, I started May 1st. So a big part of that is listening and learning, getting out into the community as well as throughout our central office. I haven't seen evidence of what Jill is alluding to. I do know that we are, at least in the last 6 months, and I would imagine before, but we're really consistent with what we're talking to our administrators about. It is not don't suspend or don't suspend, but it's more about restorative practices and the training that go along with how we make sure that students understand their actions and then what is the consequence for that action. So I know, you know, people have different viewpoints, and I know there are times when there are, when certain things happen, people want a certain consequence to happen. And if that isn't met, then I have actually seen with my own eyes that people say, well, then there is no consequence that happened. And in many cases, that just isn't the case. I understand what Jill is saying. And my job as the chief administrator in the district is to continue to look both outside of the community, so outside of our sites, and hear what people are saying, but also inside. One of the things I'm continuing to do is talk to administrators. I'm going around to every school. I'm walking through schools. By the end of the year, I will have visited every single school. But I'm also meeting with staffs after school. So it gives me the opportunity to hear directly from teachers. And the question that I ask is, what is working? What's working inside of the school? What's working from central office in terms of supporting what's happening in the classrooms instructionally? And then I ask the other question, what is not working? So I appreciate what's being said. And of course, I'm going to go back, and these are questions that I have the opportunity to go back directly to Central and dig deeper to find out if what was just alleged is in any way accurate.
Well, Jill, thanks for the call. You are hearing a lot of questions and concerns about how the district is run. You have had a lot of jobs. You did not take a traditional route to SFUSD. You ran a charter school, one of the Edison schools. You worked in Oakland as a state administrator when it had to give up local control. You were the superintendent of San Jose Unified. What's your commitment to San Francisco? Why SFUSD?
This is where I was born and raised. As I said, I went to Grattan Elementary, Hoover Middle School, and McAteer High School. Been a product, so grew up both in the Haight-Ashbury and in Hunters Point, and then taught in Hunters Point, and then ran, was a principal of Alvarado, and as you just said, Edison. So this is where I was raised. This is who poured into me. That's one. So this is my city, and it is coming home for me. That was one of the questions from the school board. What is my commitment? And I told them this is the district that I will be retiring from. Hopefully not soon, but it's the district that I will be retiring from. I don't plan to go anywhere else. And I'm really glad to be back. The challenges are many, absolutely. But I don't believe there's any more rewarding position to be back in the place that poured into you. That's why when I started teaching, the first place that I taught was in Hunters Point, because so many people in Hunters Point poured into me, and I knew that that's what I needed to give back. I wanted to give back. I was at George Washington Carver Elementary School for 5 years as a teacher, and now giving back to San Francisco Unified, the place that poured into me.
Well, let's hear next from Shelley in San Francisco. Hi, Shelley.
Hi. I wanted to ask if Dr. Matthews could give us an update on the contract with the Kip Academy High School in the Bayview. I heard a little bit of the board meeting about a month ago that it was going to be closed, and I hope that's not the case. I hope there's a way that that can be changed, because it just seems like a vital program in our city and especially in the Bayview.
Shelley, thanks for the question. Now, I understand that the board has rejected an application for a new Kip Elementary School. Is there also, well, first,
so
could
I'm
you explain
answer that? Shelley's question?
But I guess what I mean is there going to be a closure of a high school?
No. So, Shelley, the high school was came up for a petition for renewal, and the board voted unanimously to approve the renewal of the Kip High School. So that school,
oh, good.
Okay, that school will remain in place and will continue.
Okay, thanks, Shelley. Oh, yes, I was concerned there might be a conflating of some of the news here. So then explain why the board rejected the application for a new Kip Elementary School. What's your opinion of Kip in Bayview?
So the our job as a staff is to look at the application that comes in for a charter, to evaluate that charter. And the ultimate goal is to answer the question, do we believe ultimately that the provider of the charter, the person who's bringing the charter in, or the group that's bringing the charter in, can actually fulfill what they say they want to do in the charter. In our evaluation of the elementary charter, so KIPP is known for their middle schools, and they actually started high schools here in the city, and so that application for renewal, we felt that they could successfully do that. In evaluating the charter for the elementary school, our belief was that they couldn't, so we made that recommendation to the board, and that, and ultimately the board followed that recommendation and voted to deny the charter for an elementary. So the charter for the high school renewal was approved, but the charter for the application for a new elementary was denied by the board.
But overall, what's your view of charters and their role in SF Unified? I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of concerns that you just don't want to have public dollars being used for a charter school.
So our role and our belief as a district is that we are to fairly and accurately review the charter petitions before us. If we believe that the charter provider will be able to successfully implement the terms of the charter, and we believe that it will benefit us as a district in terms of moving student achievement forward, then that charter is recommended for approval, and typically the board will approve. If we don't believe that they can, then we recommend denial, and the board may or may not deny. And so it really is around, in San Francisco Unified, what we believe in is good schools. And if we believe it's going to be a good school, then the board has approved those. And so it's not that there's a belief that charters shouldn't be in the district, because we have many charters that have been approved. And so, and that night was a perfect example. One charter was, so to, you know, some people say, oh, this board doesn't believe in any charters. Well, that night, this board voted unanimously to approve a charter. So that is just false. And as we move forward, we will continue down that path. If they can implement what they say and it will benefit students in San Francisco Unified, then that will be recommended for approval. If we don't believe that, it will be recommended for denial.
Well, let's go to Sin in San Francisco. Hi, Sin.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Good morning, Dr. Matthews. So I'm a parent of a struggling child in the Southern District, the Bayview Visitation Valley area. What should Black and Latino parents do in the meantime while we're waiting for your plan to take action? It seems like you didn't want us to go to private schools, and I went to that board meeting, and the board was outright hostile to charter schools. So what should we do in the interim?
Sin, thanks.
Thank you. So at that board meeting, that once again, the board voted to approve the Kipp High School charter. So if that's hostile, I guess we differ on what hostile is, and I say that respectfully. They voted to approve one, and they voted to deny the other. And as a parent, there are a couple of things. So as you said, as you're waiting for the plan, we are actually moving forward with the plan now. We believe there are certain aspects that that we can move forward with not as much revenues as others require. So we're moving forward with certain aspects of it. So the wait shouldn't be long. And our goal is to have the plan fully in place by the start of the next school year, the 2017-18 school year. Yes. No, 18-19 school year. Sorry about that. Got to remember where I am. Our goal is to have this in place in the next school year. And so, the biggest piece, and this is what I tell all parents, is that to continue to advocate for your child, which means being visible, being public at the school, and being there so that school staffs know that there is a caring, loving parent behind this child, and with an expectation that my child will receive all the skills that they need to be successful in the 21st century, and continue to ask the questions that you're asking to make sure that your child receives the high quality education that they deserve.
Thank you, Sin, for the question. Laura writes, where are the parents in all this? I'm a product of SFUSD. My parents are Mexican immigrants, and there was a language barrier, but they always sat with me every day to do homework, and I now do the same with my daughter. Were there any findings in your research that white and Asian parents are more diligent in sitting down with their kids at home and working on schoolwork? I think one of the questions I've been wondering about actually is whether there is a difference between the reason that you have Pacific Islanders, for example, not achieving, you know, there was a 65%, rate of students who were not showing mastery in one subject area in 2016-17 that caught me off guard.
Mm-hmm. I'll go back to the C, the collaborative culture. Note with the wraparound supports isn't just outside CBOs coming in, but it really is professional development for our staffs in terms of how do we bring parents in, and professional development for parents around what are our expectations for what we need you to do as a parent in terms of getting your child prepared for school. Not just before school, before kindergarten starts, but each and every day. How do we get them ready? What are the supports we can provide? And then it's also us working together with you to make sure that it's seen as a partnership by your child, a partnership between the family, the school, for the benefit of the child. And so that collaborative culture is training, as I said, not just for staff members, not just for parents, but for all of us together on how we move forward in a partnership. Totally agree that partnership has to be in place in order for us to have successful children with the skills that they need.
And for parents like Kristen who write, what's the district going to do to support high-achieving students? With the focus on the achievement gap, high-achieving students will not be challenged.
Our focus is absolutely on all students, and that's why our mission says each and every day. So we're going to our plan right now, we have a strategic plan that actually is addressing the needs of students, most of our students. So we're going to continue with that focus. If they're high achieving, then clearly we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And while we focus on those students, the outcomes for those students who haven't been successful in our system.
Vincent Matthews, San Francisco Unified's new school superintendent, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for their calls and questions. For Dr. Matthews, you're listening to Forum. Another hour is next. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation. And by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of the Minetti Schrem Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.